Everybody, welcome to the third edition of the Social Echoes podcast. It's the True Voice Media podcast. It's been a while since we have created a broadcast of any kind, but now that we're up and running with all the different audio stuffs and everything else, we'll be ready to rock and roll with a bunch more guests all in a row instead of months in between. So in episode two, we had a Louisville marketer and Patrick Goodman. Thank you very much to Patrick and his enthralling conversation on mobile. And it's cool because today we have another Louisville guy in the author / VP, the new VP of digital strategy for Cafe Press, the founder and former CEO of Social Media Explorer, Mr. Jason Falls. Jason, thank you so much for having
me. Oh, thanks for having me. This is awesome.
So I want to start with the your recent post on Social Media Explorer about Facebook basically blackmailing brands. I know that you had a very strong viewpoint on it, and that you actually had a counterpoint on Social Media Explorer. So just kind of, is your viewpoint still the same in terms of Facebook blackmailing brands, in terms of having people have to pay to get more engagement on their pages?
Well, I think, you know, philosophically, yes, I still sort of believe that. I think that I wouldn't say that outright in the sort of tone of animosity that the headline and the blog post was written in. I mean, obviously, that point counterpoint with Kat French, who basically followed up the next day and basically said, Jason's an idiot. That post was there to drive traffic and stir up debate and discussion, which is kind of what we do on Social Media Explorer. We try to push the thinking and get people sort of churning on these ideas on their own. So it was what it was. I don't necessarily think Facebook is doing this intentionally. I think this is an unfortunate byproduct of the sheer volume of content that comes through a given person's news feed. There's no way for any content, much less the content that I've opted into seeing from either a brand or my friends, there's no way for all that content to get in front of my face, just because the average Facebook user, I think, has, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood. I think there's a certain age group out there, I believe we've shown in the research on the social habit, that the average number of friends for, I want to say, like 25 to 45 year olds is in the neighborhood of 240 contacts. So when you put that in context, and let's say that each person is posting three or four things a day, which is not very high volume. There's plenty of people out there posting a lot more. It's going to be impossible for any one person to see all of the content that even their friends post. So it's an unfortunate byproduct of the algorithm and the volume of use on Facebook. When you've got a billion users, you're going to have issues like that. So no, I don't think it's intentional, but I do think that it's unfortunate that in order for a brand to get their message in front of an audience that has raised their hand and said, I want to see this brand and their content in my news stream, which is essentially what you're doing when you hit the like button. Now, there's philosophically, I understand there's people like Robert Scoble out there who say, well, just because I click the like button doesn't mean I want to see their content, just means I like them. But technologically, within Facebook's algorithm, when you hit that like button, it's a gate that opens up and says, yes, this brand's content can come to my page. So technically, it is giving that brand permission and opting into their content. I do think it's unfortunate for an audience member who raises their hand and says, give me this content, that they're not always going to see it or that it's not easily available to them. So there's probably some solutions out there that Facebook could devise to make that better. Unfortunately, the solution they have devised is, oh, brands, you want to put your content in front of someone who wants it, you're going to have to pay in order to ensure that not every audience member sees it, but more audience sees it. I just think that's an unfortunate solution.
Yeah, I know that your good pal Jay Baer, not so much came out in stark contrast to what you were speaking of, but he basically brought up the point of, like, look, Facebook is now a publicly traded company. They are a business just as much as everybody else is, trying to make money off of their fans and et cetera. And he basically kind of presented the argument that Cat French was the one that presented the counter argument. Basically, kind of presented the same argument the cat did, and he had it on the, I guess the, not the second to last, but the third most recent Social Pros podcast. So you just, if you can, everybody can see if they're watching the video, Jason has this massive warehouse that's sitting behind him, and that's because he's now the VP of Digital Strategy at Cafe Press. You want to talk a little bit about how that came about?
Sure. I mean, Cafe Press has had their manufacturing facility here in Louisville, Kentucky, which is where I'm based, since 2005, 2006. And beginning in the spring of this year, they began migrating corporate headquarters from their original headquarters in San Mateo, California. Fred Durham, one of the founders, moved here. Bob Marino, who's the CEO, but previously was president, and then prior to that was VP of operations running this facility. They're here in Louisville now. And so they've started to migrate corporate headquarters to Louisville for a number of different reasons. And Joe Schmidt, the chief marketing officer, approached me and said, you know, hey, we really, you know, would like someone to help Cafe Press sort of socialize itself, humanize the brand a little bit, bring some of this social marketing to bear on the company, to take us to a different level of doing that. And then, you know, there's obviously some opportunities for the company in mobile optimization, lots of other areas where I've been able to advise clients over the years at Social Media Explorer. And we just started having this conversation about what would it look like if I were to join the team here. And it was a perfect opportunity, perfect timing for me in a lot of different ways. Nicole Kelly, my business partner at Social Media Explorer, was sort of running the agency, the client side of that business already. I was migrating away more toward information products, events, things of that nature. And the opportunity just struck at the right time. It seemed like an incredible professional challenge to join a publicly traded company, a huge online retailer with some, you know, some sort of e-commerce thinking. I wouldn't call it old school thinking, just e-commerce thinking at the root of its marketing decisions, and sort of looking at it from a different perspective and seeing what I could bring to bear on this company, and a company that was focused on and willing to put resources behind building more of a team and a presence here in Louisville, Kentucky, which is a point of local pride for me. So, you know, the professional opportunity, the professional challenge, and the timing with Social Media Explorer and migrating everything over to Nicole was just a perfect, you know, sort of coincidence, and it just worked out great. And so you are talking to me on day 12 at Cafe Press. That's right. So we've kicked off a few things since I've been here, but we still got a lot of room to grow.
Day 12, you're in your infancy over there, buddy.
I am. That's fantastic. I don't even have a Cafe Press t-shirt yet, man.
Oh, course, man.
It's peak season, though. I mean, we're right in the middle of holiday season, so they're not going to stop and print the new guy t-shirt. So.
No, I can understand that, but hopefully they'll get you one by day 24, perhaps.
Hopefully.
So you mentioned your business partner, Nicole Kelly. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, I'm sure there's no hard feelings in terms of you handing over the reins, but was there any twinge of, like, not so much... I want to say regret. I want to say bittersweet. Was there anything like bittersweet? You're handing over your baby, the keys to, you know, the first car that kind of brought you into the whole stratosphere.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little weird, but again, the two things were at play. First of all, the professional challenge and opportunity at Cafe Press was phenomenal, and I didn't want to walk away from that. And if I were running Social Media Explorer by myself, I probably would have made the same decision and just sunset the business. Fortunately, I wasn't, though, and I was running it with a young lady who I trust implicitly, who has a vision and a passion for building Social Media Explorer into something much bigger and better than I probably would have or could have. And so it was just sort of a natural, okay, this makes perfect sense. Yeah, there was a little hesitation because Social Media Explorer is mine. I created it. You know, I sort of... I got a graphic designer at Doe Anderson, you know, on the cheap a few years ago, Kevin Price, to design the logo and everything. This is kind of my baby, right? But I'm not, you know, totally detached from Social Media Explorer either. I have a different day job, but I'm still You know, what amounts to a silent partner. I still have some input and influence on the business, and I'm still a shareholder and a decision maker in the business. So it's kind of the best of both worlds. It's having your cake and eating it too a little bit. I still get to be an owner and involved in Social Media Explorer's growth. I still get to blog there. I'm still going to host the Explorer events that we do. So I'm still very much involved in being what I call the chief instigator at Social Media Explorer, but I just have a different sort of 9-to-5. And so the fantastic thing for Social Media Explorer's audience members, both the blog and the events, is now I have this interesting slice of professional life that I didn't have before, working for a publicly traded company, working for a, you know, multiple hundreds of millions of dollars online retailer, and learning how they are running things, and then incorporating sort of a social marketing, social business mentality into what they're doing. The learnings that I'm going to be able to share from that as we move forward, I think, are going to be really powerful. So, yeah, a little hesitancy, but you know, nothing anymore. It wasn't devastating. It wasn't a hard decision, because Nicole was ready and the right person. It's kind of like a startup founder or CEO who is asked to step aside, you know, by the board of directors, say, hey, you've never run a company this big, so it's time for you to go, and maybe we'll find another role for you. And that happens naturally in the entrepreneurship world. This was on a much smaller scale. I hadn't built Social Media Explorer up to be a $100 million company or anything, but it was the right time for me to say, okay, let's see what somebody else can do with this. And so, again, it was just this confluence of perfect timing and opportunity that made it really easy.
I want to touch upon the Social Media Explorer events in a second. I'm going to get to that in my next question. But, you know, you're talking about how Cafe Press is such a big company. What is the difference between and you've worked with a lot of large brands, you know, before you started Social Media Explorer and with Social Media Explorer. What is the difference between focusing your primary attention on one brand that has all these different, you know, reaches and kind of faces internationally and at home versus working with many different brands?
Well, you know, I think the biggest difference that I've noticed so far, 12 days in, is that you are a primary participant in the decision making. When you are at an agency, when you're a consultant, you are at best secondary, if not tertiary. You make recommendations to the client. They go off on their merry way, make their decision, and come back and say yes or no, or yes if we change it to be this, 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 and this. And in that instance, a lot of people in the agency world will tell you, and I'll tell you too, that clients have a tendency of mucking up, you know, the brilliance, right? They'll take an idea and tear it up a little bit and give it back to you and say, okay, this is what we're going to do, and it doesn't end up working quite as well as it could have because of legal or compliance or personal preference or whatever.
Right.
And so now when I take ideas to the decision makers, first of all, in a lot of the ideas, I am the decision maker. So I get to say yes or no. And then when I run those decisions, or if there's a decision that needs to be approved by someone else up the ladder, I mean, I'm one degree removed from Bob Marino, our CEO, whose office is about 25 yards that way. So, you know, Joe Schmidt, the chief marketing officer, is my immediate report, and then Joe obviously reports to Bob and to the board of directors. So I'm an active participant in the decision making. I'm going to sit down with the executive team here, and we're going to make decisions that change the way we do things. And so I don't have to be on the outside looking in, hoping that they buy my argument. I'm actually in the room making the argument myself. And so being closer to the bone is the biggest difference. I think there's a lot of similarities, though, too, at least in scope and workflow and all that good stuff, because a lot of people don't realize this, but Cafe Press has a number of brands underneath its umbrella. Canvas On Demand, Great Big Canvas. We just acquired Easy Prints a few months ago. We've got Invitation Box. We've got a lot of other customization engines for different types of products, if you will, that fall under the Cafe Press Inc. corporate umbrella, and I serve all of those too. Now, fortunately, there's other people in the marketing departments in both those organizations and in Cafe Press Inc. So I'm not doing it all by myself. We have a nice team here, but at the same time, I'm working for one company. I'm working for one umbrella corporate brand, but I'm working for a lot of sub brands that are sort of clients of mine too. So it can be sticky and challenging and layered and all that good stuff, just like an agency can be, but it's certainly nice to be closer to the bone in the decision-making process.
I could certainly see how that would be a big, big, big fat plus. So your Explore events, I know that when we met for the Phillies Pirates game in the end of June, yep, we talked a little bit about your Explore events, and you really kind of make that point to kind of go to some of the smaller cities. And they don't mean smaller in terms of, but like basically ones that wouldn't be on the national stage all the time. So you're going to Portland, you're going to Memphis. What is the biggest difference between in the social scene between a city like Portland versus a San Francisco or New York City?
Well, I to be honest with you, ironically enough, some of the smaller cities on that scale of, you know, they're not going to get the big national conventions like New York, Chicago, LA, San Francisco, Las Vegas. That's pretty much your big city markets. Everything else is kind of a tertiary or a secondary market. And so, you know, the Portland, Oregon's of the world, you know, Minneapolis is a pretty big town but doesn't get a whole lot of national stuff. We did go to Nashville, so on and so forth. Those towns have a tendency, I've found, to be have a higher concentration of really passionate, enthusiastic people around social and digital marketing. And so certainly in New York or Chicago or LA, you've got a lot more of them, but they tend to be, you know, leading edge, bleeding edge, or they're so spread out and dispersed within a much larger community that a social media club chapter in, say, Los Angeles is different from the one in Orange County, which is different from the one in, I don't know, Long Beach, which is different from the one somewhere else. And so you've got a little bit, because it's a population center, you've got a little bit of fracturing there. When you go to a Portland and you do an event and the social media club and maybe the American Marketing Association or someone gets behind you, everybody in town who should come to those events comes to those events. So you get a higher degree of turnout of the marketing decision makers that you want in the room. It's also a byproduct, I think, of those markets, and this was the original intent, why we're going to go to national conference tier one cities. The reason we did that was because we wanted to serve cities and markets that we felt like were underserved from a sort of national thought leader, conference and speaking event coming that close to them. And so when you go into a market like Portland or Nashville, and you bring in people like Jay Baer and Scott Stratton and, humbly I would submit myself to a degree there, I guess, and then, Amber Naslund and Mark Schaefer and some of the other people that spoke, Peter Kim and some of the other people that spoke in our events this year, all of a sudden these people don't have to fly to Las Vegas or Chicago or New York to see a high concentration of really smart thought leaders in the space. And so that's why we chose to do that. We feel like we're serving a tier of cities and communities and regions that aren't necessarily well served by having those high concentration of big speakers in the industry. Now, granted, we are a relatively small conference when you look at the Blog Worlds or New Media Expos of the world, the iStrategy, so on and so forth. I mean, we're looking at 250, 350 people at our events, which is not very many when you compare it to others. So we're not going to have, unless we get really lucky, we're not going to get Guy Kawasaki or Richard Branson or anybody like that to come to our events. So if you wanted to tier it, you know, we're not going to get the big headline keynote folks at these big conferences. But I think what we try to focus on instead of sizzle, we try to give you the steak. We try to give you some really good meat to your experience so that you walk away with, I hate to use this phrase because it's overused, but actionable insights that you can turn around and use immediately in your business.
Yeah, and I certainly, the folks that you do feature at your events, they are certainly, they can be keynote speakers in and of themselves. I mean, if you're there and Jay Baer's there, Scott Stratton, Those are some big name guys. And again, we're looking at it from the social. We know these people. We know that they bring good perspective. But I would almost say, arguably, in the same vein, Philadelphia is kind of in that second tier thought process, in that Philadelphia is full of a lot of passionate businesses, but you aren't thinking of Philadelphia when you're thinking of social. And that's something that True Voice Media is certainly trying to do here. And I'd be lying to you if I didn't say that we would love to have a Jason Falls event in Philadelphia one of these days.
Well, Philadelphia has been batted around in conversations for sure. And I don't know that it's going to happen in 2013, but I don't know that it's not, and I don't know that it wouldn't happen soon.
Well, you know that you have our vote. So you just wrote another book with DJ Waldo, mm-hmm. The Rebel's Guide to Email Marketing.
Yep.
And I will say I have purchased it. I have not read it to its completion. But what did you feel like the need was to write another email book? Because there's plenty of email marketing books, but I think people occasionally look over email when in thoughts of social, but they're so well connected, and they're so vital to one another.
Well, I think you answered the question yourself. I mean, people overlook email these days and focus so holistic or focus so specifically on social media marketing. And so there were a couple of reasons we wrote the book. One was we wanted to bring that focus back, because email marketing is still the most effective digital channel in terms of return on investment per dollar spent, according to the Direct Marketers Association. I think it's just under $41 return for every dollar spent on average in email marketing. And that's like 20 some odd dollars above the next channel, which is, I believe, pay-per-click or search engine marketing. And so it's still an incredibly effective way to drive business. It's an incredibly effective way to engage and stay engaged with your audience. And so we wanted to make sure that we kind of pulled back a little bit for the industry and said, okay, Facebook and Twitter and social and blogging and all that's great, SEO and all that stuff's great, but hey, let's not forget what we can really do if we pull back and incorporate all these tools, especially the one that we know works very, very well. I think the other reason we wanted to do it was there had not been, in our opinion, and I don't mean to overlook or offend anyone by saying this, but there had not been a really strong sort of email marketing for small business book in a few years. So we felt like it was, especially with the evolution of social media, it was important to get something out there to help medium and small businesses who were looking for that little starter kit, how-to kind of blueprint to get them in the vein of not only thinking email marketing, but also how do you incorporate that with social. And so I brought certainly a fair amount of social and a little bit of email expertise to the table. DJ brings a whole lot of email expertise and a fair amount of social to the table as well. So combining both of our opinions, we were able to kind of pound out, I think, a really good book that helps people understand sort of the intersection of those two. And then we did it in kind of a fun way because, I mean, you know, my first book had a swear word on the title, so I wasn't going to be a, you know, straight-laced corporate book there. We did it in a fun way, and sort of the Rebel's Guide is really talking about all of the quote-unquote rules of email marketing, like never use the word free, never put all caps in your headlines, never send one big image. So we took all those rules that email marketing experts will tell you are wrong, and we showed case studies and examples of people who were breaking those rules and succeeding. So our opinion is that it's not about following someone else's rules. It's about carving out, testing, and establishing your own so that you know what your audience will respond to and won't respond to, because some audiences like the one big image and they'll click on it and they'll download the coupon, so on and so forth. So you've got to test and iterate with your own audience to be able to understand what your rules are.
Yeah, and that's great. I really look forward to finishing the book because No Bullshit Social Media was a terrific book. So I really hope that you continue to write, and if that's something you want to do, keep at it.
I think I might have some insight into the online retail world at some point. So we'll
I can't imagine why you would. So you just started a regular Q&A segment with Entrepreneur Magazine. Has there been any questions that have kind of jumped at you and you've been really like, you when you first saw them, you said, I can't wait to answer this and kind of set the record straight?
Well, I mean, the questions that entrepreneurs and business owners are asking are I think to a degree, fortunately, but to a greater degree, unfortunately, the same questions they've been asking for a few years now. What's the ROI of social media? I think that was one of the first ones I answered. There's the question of how do I measure this? How do I quantify this? How do I build followers and fans, I think, was one that I saw. So these are sort of the standard questions that keep coming up. What I'm excited about is as we get through this series of a few months of sort of churning through the churn, we're going to be able to surface some questions from people that are a little bit deeper, a little bit more insightful, so that we can sort of push the thinking forward. And I'm kind of excited about that because I'm waiting on an entrepreneur to come along and give me a question that is a deeper problem, like, there's two ways to make money online. You either drive more traffic or drive more conversions. I've been driving the crap out of traffic, but I can't figure out the conversions problem. Those are the questions that I want to try to answer for people, because I think that's what's going to push all businesses and all entrepreneurs and all of the industry forward. I think in the last probably 3 years, we've started to hear the same questions over and over again, and businesses don't seem to be moving forward as fast as they were from, say, 06 to 09. And I'd like to see us fast forward a little bit and do a better job of educating more efficiently so that we can start tackling harder problems for people.
So with that said, do you think that people are still kind of missing the boat in terms of social media and social business actually being able to drive business?
I think they are, but I don't necessarily think it's like someone's fault. I don't think it's something that I think it's just sort of endemic of the market right now. Businesses are still trying to figure out where social fits. Most businesses, and I think this is a huge irony, I think you have a lot of businesses that are saying, okay, we want to use Facebook to engage our audience, but then they expect sales to be the end result of that. And if you want Facebook to drive sales, then your goal on Facebook needs to be to sell things, not to engage the audience. Now, yes, you can combine those two in some cool ways, but very few businesses have figured that out, how to do that. So I think people are still going into it with this naivete, if you will, of I'm going to chitter chatter all day and it's going to drive more sales. What you need to do is you need to drive more sales all day so that it will drive more sales. Or you need to chitter chatter all day and build that sort of conversational, build trust, build relationships so that you have an audience that's ready to deliver a message to when you want to build sales. And I think there's a disconnect there for most businesses on how and why they're using these social networks. But again, I think it's a problem of not necessarily each individual business is making a mistake, because I think much of the industry is still churning on that. There are some really smart, sophisticated, experienced marketers who are still trying and failing at this. Most of them are not going to admit that, but I can tell you that as the challenge here at Cafe Press is a significant one, because you've got this, you know, very successful company that started from nothing in 1999 and became a publicly traded huge revenue generator, online retail, e-commerce. I wouldn't say giant, but pretty big company. And now we're trying to wrap social and humanization into that online e-commerce experience. That's a significant challenge. And I like to think I'm pretty good at what I do, and I like to think I'm pretty smart, but I can't tell you right now what the answer to that is. That's what I'm here to do. That's what I'm here to figure out. And I'm going to try like hell to do it. But we may be sitting here a year from now and I haven't figured it out yet. So we are in a period of time in digital marketing or marketing in general where there's so much data, there's so much information, there's so many conversations going on online that we cannot understand human behavior when it comes to our consumer marketplaces very well, because it changes so rapidly. And there are so many markets, market factors that affect how consumers interact online. Shiny new object happens over here, and all of a sudden, hey, look, everybody's leaving Instagram, or, you know, which is the news of the day, right? Oh, terms of service suck. Let's go to Flickr. Oh, my God, you know. So it's hard for a marketer to understand where the audiences are, what they're talking about, how they're doing it. And so it's a very trying time for marketers right now, because it's hard to put a finger on a pulse of who your audience is, what they want, and what will work, because tomorrow might be different than today. Yep. So I think you're going to see that level out over the course of the next year or two. I certainly hope so. As the technology, the tools that are out there get better, as mainstream Americans and mainstream, you know, global audiences continue to adopt and adapt to social channels, you'll start to see some normalcy, some patterns emerge that we can recognize and capitalize on. But for a lot of people, this is still kind of a guessing game.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to kind of almost touch upon my own question, that is certainly our goal as well, in terms of, you know, True Voice Media is the Philadelphia Social Business Agency, and we have to continually try and address the different issues of how does social media drive back to business, and it's going to be a different answer for each client and each company that comes to us and wants to know. So thank you very much for your answer. And Jason, before I let you go, and thank you very much for taking as much time as you have with us today, I just want to say that to everybody that's listening, watching, that Jason Falls is by far one of the most social people ever. He's such a nice guy. You really are. I remember when I first made contact with you, I referenced already the Phillies game earlier in the podcast. But when I asked you if you wanted to go, you said yes, absolutely. It felt like at first it wasn't going to happen because of different scheduling issues. I actually was at the Phillies game the next night before the game we were supposed to go to. You sent me an email. He said, yes, we're going to do it again. I said, excellent. I got Jeff Gibbard, my boss, to come back down to the game. We had a great time. Met your son, Grant, who's going to be a statistician one day. he's such a cool kid. But yeah. Basically, you're an awesome guy. Thank you so much for having the time to come on the Social Echoes podcast. Definitely going to have to come out to PNC Park this summer, watch a Phillies Pirates game.
Say the Buccos.
Yes. And so before I let you go, Jason, where can people find you online?
Well, first of all, thank you for saying all those nice things. I'm a nice guy because I'm a reflection of the people I hang out with. So thank you. That's a reflection on you and Jeff and everybody too. I'm easy to find online. Jason Falls on Twitter. Jason Falls on most social networks. I still blog at socialmediaexplorer.com, so you can check me out there. And then my little personal place where I blog about things that are not marketing related is fallsofftherocker.com. So come find me.
fallsofftherocker.com is one of the best play on words for your name and also what the blog entails. All your stuff is great. All your writing is good. Your opinions are solid. Always a pleasure to speak with you, sir. Next week on the Social Echoes podcast, we're going to have Seth Everett, who is the sports director at Spreecast. And Jason, I know that you probably are familiar with him simply because we're both big baseball guys. I'm very excited to hear what Seth has to say, what Spreecast is doing.
That'd be awesome.
All right. Until next time, thank you very much for listening, watching, and we'll catch you on the flip side.